Welcome to Bewildered. I'm Martha Beck, here with Rowan Mangan. At this crazy moment in history, a lot of people are feeling bewildered, but that actually may be a sign we're on track. Human culture teaches us to come to consensus, but nature, our own true nature, helps us come to our senses. Rowan and I believe that the best way to figure it all out is by going through bewilderment into bewilderment. That's why we're here. For almost 30 years, I've been teaching people to do something that I call reading your internal compasses. I believe we are all born with direction-finding mechanisms that are inherent in us and will help us find our best destiny. A few years ago, though, I realized that a lot of people were getting very, very anxious. And this is true. Anxiety is going nuts all over the planet. So I spent 5 years researching and writing a book about how to read your compasses and lower the anxiety that's getting between you and your right life. And I'm very excited about the book. It's coming out in 2025, but I would love to teach you about it before the book comes out. So this summer, I'm doing a course called The Wayfinder's Compass, Moving Beyond Anxiety. And you can check it out by going to marthabeck.com/compass. And we will have a fabulous time putting you on course for your North Star. Hi, I'm Martha Beck.
And I'm Rowan Mangan. And this is another episode of Bewildered, the podcast for people trying to figure it out. How you doing, Marty Lee?
Doing great. Got my lidocaine patches all over my back. Everything's perfect with lidocaine. Lovely. What are you trying to figure out in your life?
So the other day, this may not be easy for you to hear, Marty, but I'm just going to tell you. The other day, like you and I, we pass each other in the day. Sometimes we're busy and, you know, I'm just coming from the dentist. You're on your way to a meeting and little peck on the cheek, little not hot and heavy kissing, just a little like, mwah, hey, honey. And we had one of those. And it struck me afterwards that it's probably weird that when I go to give my wife a kiss, she a look of horror and revulsion crosses her face, and she tries to like lean away from me a little bit, even as she's leaning in.
Never.
Like your body's leaning towards me, but your neck is kind of pushing your face back a little bit. And now I will say I feel quite secure in our relationship, so it was more of an idle thought than a panic. I wonder where she does that. And then I realized, can you guess?
Because of the massive electrical shock we always give each other.
In our house, at certain times of year, there is some really full-on electric shock stuff going on. And I think kisses are often like where we feel them. And so
I love you, honey, but I could lose a lip. I'm not kidding.
What would that look like?
Oh, please. People are going to send us pictures
of people who lost their lips kissing their wives under circumstances that created electric shocks.
I'm sure they're out there.
So I was trying to figure that out, but I think I've done it. And you know what? We're going to get through this.
Yeah. As soon as you said it, I was like, imagine giving you a peck and then, oh, no, no, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you often, it must be said that when you come up, you often like poke me on the shoulder first.
That's true.
Trying to ground, like, clear, clear.
It's like Grey's Anatomy in our house.
However,
to just
yeah,
say
my
hi.
Heart ever stops. Just lean down, give me a little kiss. Whoa.
That's hilarious. Okay. So what are you trying to figure out?
Not that far distant, really.
Yeah.
If you think about it, we had this wonderful lunch in the city with a most lovely person from a publishing house, and we had just met her, and we were having the best conversation, and I was waxing prolix, as one says. I was loquacious. I spoke in many words until you started kicking me under the table, and I was like, oh, I said the wrong thing, and I would like take a whole different tack. And then you'd kick me again, and I'd be like, have you ever seen an ostrich? And then you'd kick me, and I'd be like, George III peed blue. Did you know that? He had this. And then you'd kick me again. And you'd kick me again, and I was like, how about like Formula One racing? You'd kick me, like, and finally, I literally had to say right in front of this beautiful woman that we just met, Ro, are you kicking me because I'm saying the wrong things?
At which point I said, if I'm remembering this correctly, what? What are you talking about?
That was your very eloquent answer.
I don't wax as loquacious as you, but yeah, I had not been kicking you on purpose at all. I think I was trying to, like, there was something about the height of the table that made it tricky for me to cross my one leg over the other leg. And
you're a victim because you're tall. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah,
you have those long, like long legs.
Yeah, yeah, tall people can be violent sometimes. That's how it goes.
I wouldn't know. But I'm glad I didn't say horrible wrong things.
Have you ever seen an ostrich? I love that the way your mind works is I this is you. I'm being you. I think my partner's kicking me under the table for saying the wrong thing, but that's okay. I'm going to solve it. In this meeting with a publishing house, I am going to pivot to what can't possibly go wrong. Have you ever seen an ostrich? What I like about it is that it's a yes, no question.
That's right. Brief, simple, to the point. Anyone can participate. But you know the best thing to say if you're at a cocktail party or something, and I hate cocktail parties, and you're totally out of things to say, mm-hmm. and you're just, like, I get in this block where I can't talk. All you have to do is have this in your back pocket, this question. You just turn to the nearest person and say, have you ever been attacked by an animal? You will have a group of people around you talking and talking because we evolved to discuss being attacked by animals. It's a no fail.
So what you should have said is not, have you ever seen an ostrich, but have you ever been attacked by an ostrich, which, can we tell the story?
I've told it. Already.
You got to tell it again.
Okay. Well, there was this wonderful ostrich that we knew who was a wild ostrich.
She's called Jessica. No, it's Jennifer.
Jennifer. People at Londolozzi, the game preserve where we do our yearly seminars, this one lone ostrich came in, and they always take people out at sunset, and everyone gets out and has a little drink and a snack in the beautiful bush. And this ostrich started running up to groups of people, and they'd have to climb in their Land Rovers and drive away. And she would come running up to them again. And finally, a ranger was out there on his own, and he just thought, this has got to stop. I'm not leaving. And Jennifer, the ostrich.
We're being harassed by this ostrich.
Yes.
And I'm not taking it anymore. Jennifer, it's you and me.
And Jennifer ran up to him and stopped and just sat there, like, hanging out. And they realized she was lonely.
She just wanted some friends.
I know. So they just started having Jennifer stop at the drink stops and just hang out. And she was less lonely. And then two male ostriches came onto the property after like a year. And then they got together and she had eggs, but she was still really tame-ish, but not tamed. But they were telling us this, and we were on a game drive with this Shangaan ranger named Exxon after the company. And he was sitting on this forward seat on the hood of the car. And we saw these ostriches. And sure enough, Jennifer came over. She stood by him and she put her wing in his lap.
Yeah.
And he held her wing in his hand.
Yeah.
They just held hands.
And it was so nice.
And then.
But Marty, have you ever been attacked by a wild animal?
Then Jennifer came back to see us. And she leaned over and I put up my hand in ostrich formation, making it look like the head of an ostrich.
Like you're trying to do a duck in the shadow puppet.
Right. So that'll fool her. So I reach my hand out and she leans her beautiful beak toward my hand and gently touched my hand, at which moment I feel a violent blow on the back of my head. Wham! And it's Karen.
Saying, our beloved
Marty,
Karen.
She's going to hurt you. So yeah, I was severely injured in an ostrich attack by my loving partner who slapped me from behind as I was being gently kissed by a loving ostrich. It was a love festival, but I came out of it bruised.
See, interestingly, Jennifer's also in a thruple.
That's true, with the two males.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thruples everywhere.
We'll be right back with more Bewildered. I have a favor to ask. You might not know this, but ratings and reviews are like gold in the podcasting universe. They get podcasts in front of more faces, more eyes, more ears, all the bits that you could have a podcast in front of, that's what they do. So it would help us enormously if you would consider going over to your favorite podcasting app especially if it's Apple, and giving us a few stars, maybe even 5, maybe even 6. If you can find a way to hack the system, I wouldn't complain. And a review would also be wonderful. We read them all and love them. So thank you very much in advance. Let's just go out there and bewilder the world. Mwah.
For almost 30 years, I've been teaching people to do something that I call reading your internal compasses. I believe we are all born with direction-finding mechanisms that are inherent in us and will help us find our best destiny. A few years ago, though, I realized that a lot of people were getting very, very anxious. And this is true. Anxiety is going nuts all over the planet. So I spent 5 years researching and writing a book about how to read your compasses and lower the anxiety that's getting between you and your right life. And I'm very excited about the book. It's coming out in 2025, but I would love to teach you about it before the book comes out. So this summer, I'm doing a course called The Wayfinder's Compass, Moving Beyond Anxiety. And you can check it out by going to marthabeck.com/compass. And we will have a fabulous time putting you on course for your North Star.
So listen, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say let's pivot to the old the podcast that we're doing.
Oh, that. Yeah. I remember that. Let's do it. It's a Bewildfile today.
It is. It is. And as constant listeners will know, the Bewildfiles episodes are when we hear what you're trying to figure out and try to help with that. And today we're hearing from Sari.
Yes.
Hi, Rowan, Martha. My name is Sari and I love your podcast. What I'm trying to figure out is how do you know if by learning all the methods to self-soothe, you're not actually enabling yourself to stay in situations that aren't aligned with your integrity? How do you know the difference between when to take action outside yourself and when to just deal with the emotions internally? Thank you.
Yeah, it can be so confusing, I think, for those of us who are in the habit of questioning our thoughts and not always totally believing what we think in a given situation, to know when it's time for which, right?
Right, yeah. And for those of you who are not familiar with the whole questioning your thoughts thing, we're not taught to question our thoughts growing up. So one of the things that we do that's kind of extra cultural, I mean outside culture, not more culture, is that we acknowledge the idea that a lot of our problems come not from circumstances, but from our thoughts about those circumstances. So you could be in a conversation where you feel offended by someone and they could mean all the best, but you have something in your head that says, she is only complimenting me to mock me or whatever. The problem isn't with the circumstances, it's with your thoughts about it. So you need to shift your thinking and then you won't have as much suffering.
Yeah, and sorry didn't use that language. She was talking about self-soothing, but this is the direction that we're taking it in terms of knowing the difference between those two times.
Right.
When the problem is you and when the problem is the situation.
Right. Thank you. So every now and then we do have to make a judgment about when a circumstance is not going right and we have to, is it requiring us to look at our thinking, just adapt our attitude, look at the situation freshly, you know,
and you have a lot of clients who have this situation, right, in terms of jobs or marriages. Or
should I stay or should I go is like a constant question that everyone has. I think as things move faster in the world, it comes up a lot.
Yeah. And as we were sort of thinking about this topic, we found ourselves focusing mostly on romantic relationships just because it is very common for this question to come up in that. And it feels like the stakes are especially high in that situation.
They are very emotional.
So what would you say the culture says about this topic, Marty?
You know, I think that the culture doesn't care about our happiness. So it's like, it cares about itself. So it basically says, look, I don't care which option you choose, but don't change the culture. Don't disrupt anything. The correct choice is whatever causes the fewest ripples. Like, if you're a modern American in a bad marriage, divorce is pretty common, very common. It's like 2/3 of all marriages end in divorce, and it's accepted socially. But like, remember when we were watching The Crown, and Prince Philip is like stepping out on the Queen, and Queen Elizabeth is like, there will be no divorce. And the reason for that, the series is called The Crown, because it's like maximum cultural pressure when you actually wear the crown. You have to keep the rules of the culture. You are the culture.
And the culture in this instance, just to be super clear, is actually the culture of the monarchy itself.
Yes, not England necessarily, but the monarchy, especially at that time, there was no divorce. And I remember thinking it's so, because she would say, it's not my decision, it's the crown that demands it. And I thought, that's a lot to be taking orders from your hat. Like, I must not do that. Everyone, I hate you, but I will not divorce you because my hat forbids it.
So Liz is unhappy, Philip's unhappy, but the hat is happy because the culture remains unperturbed, right? They haven't played with it. I love that you talk about it as the hat, because it's such a great metaphor for how ridiculous culture is, right? Yeah. And just how it's this ridiculous, like, I can't do what my heart wants me to do because my hat says I can't. Like, that's what we sound like. You know, I can't follow my heart because I have to follow my hat.
I actually got a hat and started taking orders from it. I don't want to stay in bed till noon, but my hat insists. Where are the corgis? Sorry, Brits who, you know, revere the monarchy. I'll try to be better.
Both of them.
Anyway, we all participate in lots of different cultures these days. So it's not one monolithic culture as much as it ever. Increasingly, it's multiple cultural pressures, which is why I think Thanksgiving Day fights in America are getting more and more volatile. You never know what someone's subculture is going to pressure them into. And then they come together wearing different hats.
Yeah. Cultural clashes at Thanksgiving. So we have to be able to take off the hat to some extent before we can answer this question, right? Because otherwise we're just going to be, I mean, in fairness to Elizabeth and Philip, I think they sorted things out.
They made it work.
They made it work somehow, those two crazy kids. But in order to get the clarity, you can't have any clarity while you're still wearing your hat.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So take off the hat.
And as I always say, the best way to get off your hat is to go into a room by yourself. It's like Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own. When I read that as a kid, I was like, why is she? I never had a room of my own. And I'm like, why is she so selfish? And it's like, she was just talking about a space to have your own thoughts, where you could really be whole. And wasn't she closeted gay? And yeah. And then she committed suicide because she didn't she didn't have a room of her own. It looks like,
Maddie, I think you're going out on a bit of a limb here.
It looks like she committed suicide just because of real estate. But in actuality, it was the homophobia of her culture that she wore like the hat of doom. And it did her in. It did her in.
So, in solitude, we can escape culture.
Yes. Right. Yes. Okay. And then, you have to get to the point where you know that the battering of your cultural influences has sort of died down. Like, you have to really, you're in a hurricane of cultural pressures. And you were saying something that I'd never heard about this, but to answer Sari's question, she needs to go, you said, below the bedrock.
Yeah, so I think you can't even ask the question until you're way down at the bedrock level of yourself, because it's just culture, 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 culture. There's this whole archaeology, layers and layers of the different cultures that we move within, and questions that are this high stakes that we ask ourselves. And like, if you're asking yourself, it means that there's some inner conflict, right? Like, before you even can ask yourself this question, you've got to get below bedrock, get at bedrock or below bedrock. Then you ask it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we can go on.
And you ask it in where you know you're to the bedrock because it gets quiet inside, right? Mm. The culture is very clamorous. You have to, you must, you have to, you must. And I often see people go to their hearts and go, okay, I know, in the quiet. And then they start thinking about other people and they're like, oh, no, yeah, but. And I used to call it getting on the island of yeah, but, where you see the ship and you want to get on it, but you think, yeah, but and you don't get on ship after ship and choices pass you by. So that's a risk.
And I think that one of the things that it's one of my bugbears on this podcast, that language exists mostly within culture as well. And so when I hear you saying that about yeah, but, I think that's part of our resistance to escaping culture.
Yes.
If there's a lot of language going on.
Yeah.
You're probably not at the bedrock level yet.
Yeah.
So in our marriage example, Marty, the options look like first option, stay, continue to soothe yourself and do the thought work or go to therapy.
Right.
You know.
And stay there. I always tell people stay as long as you can.
Yeah.
And somebody told me that when I was a Mormon and I immediately left. Because being given the permission to follow your heart actually will take you down below the bedrock, and now you've got somebody on your side. There's a cultural element too. So if you go down below the bedrock and you know that it's your integrity to take the exit action, then it's pretty clear. But stay in as long as you can. Work it, you know, try the therapy.
And then option two then is to leave, or in Sari's word, to act.
Yeah. Yeah. So
all right. So you've got, should I stay or should I go now?
Yeah.
What
You're
do I do,
You're asking
Marty?
The question. Oh, I will tell you, as always, in just a minute. Hello, the lovely peoples. This is Martha, inviting you to a free masterclass that I have made called 5 Paths to Your Purpose. Probably the most common question I get from people is, how do I find my purpose? Why don't I feel that I'm on purpose? Well, it turns out there are certain things you have to do to find your purpose, and I broke them down into 5, and I made a little masterclass about it. So if you'd like to see it, just go to marthabeck.com/purpose, and you will be able to watch it without any charge at all.
So how do we figure it out?
Yeah, you're in a should I stay or should I go situation. And there's a question from Byron Katie, a spiritual teacher I admire, that I thought was a really good one. She says, can you think of a reason not to leave? Can you think of a reason to stay where you are? She says, can you think of a peaceful reason to stay? Which is really, really different. A peaceful reason.
And this all relates to knowing your own truth, right? Like the feeling that you get, you've talked about when you say the phrase, I'm meant to live in peace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I looked the world over literally for one thing that would make everyone feel a sense of truth. And the thing that makes most people feel really in their truth most is asking the question or making the statement, I am meant to live in peace. So if you say that out there, wherever you're listening, say it a few times and your body, your heart, your mind, and your soul tend to all come into alignment.
So if you can get alone and then reach the feeling of bedrock, mm-hmm. It's like a shortcut is, you know, what happens if you say to yourself in that solitude,
yeah,
I'm meant to live in peace.
And then say, I'll stay. Can I find a peaceful reason? A reason that feels like that. I leave. Is that a peaceful reason? A reason that feels like that? And I've had people go either way, but the peace thing was very strong. It was a very helpful deciding factor. And I think they made the right choices. Yeah.
So what if I feel peaceful about leaving today, but then tomorrow I don't? Like, what do I do if I fear the regret of making a choice that feels peaceful today? Does that make sense?
Always. I mean, people always are worried about it. It's so hard and scary. But when you think about it, either choice is a potential regret. So you could regret leaving a situation, or you could stay in a situation and think, oh my God, I just gave 10 years of my life. I wish I had acted sooner. So it's really hard. Mm. But I really think the peaceful option is your best bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I guess there's also a, like, how often are you having the thought, oh, I wonder if I should leave? Like, if that comes and goes, right, it's probably not like, oh, run away.
There's another thing that you should probably consider too, and that's that there are different parts of you. So I love part psychology. And it's probable that there's a part of you that wants to leave and a part of you that wants to go.
There's a part of you that wants to leave and a part of you that wants to go, Freud?
Dr. Freud to the floor. Part of you that wants to leave and part of you that wants to stay. And one thing you can do is sit down with a notebook and say, okay, part that wants to leave, give me your answer, give me your reasons, and have that part write them down. Mm. And then say, okay, part that wants to stay, what are your reasons? Write those down. If you can get them talking to each other, they can often think of, they can pick a best option, or even better, they can create a third option that you hadn't thought of before.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's really good.
I really love that.
So, and if you're... Just remember, if you're always thinking that question, should I leave it or should I go? Should I leave or should I go? Then
I think the answer's in the question.
It's like if you go into a hotel room and you immediately go, oh, I think maybe I should get a different room. If you go into a hotel room that's copacetic, you don't ask that question. So if you're asking it from the moment you get in to the moment you get out, pay attention.
I remember a hotel room.
I
once stayed in. Hotel is probably too strong a word. I was out in rural Maharashtra, India.
Oh, really?
And I was staying in this little town that had hot springs and stuff. But I was traveling in my 20s and I was traveling cheap. And traveling cheap in India is quite a thing, let me tell you. And this one room, I went into the room. It was the only place. It was like I was about to give birth to Jesus. It was the only room available in the town, and it was right in my budget. The room was all cement. Mm-hmm. As I recall, there was a small window with some bars, but the floor was cement. The walls were cement. The ceiling couldn't have been cement, but it felt like it. Mm. Anyway, all there was in the middle of the room was a bed, like a twin size bed, and above it, a single light bulb hung suspended
from
it. It was about like a 20 watt one, you know.
You didn't like
the
chandelier, huh?
And so it was very dim. So even when the light was lit, you couldn't see the corners of the room.
Cool.
And the other thing about traveling as a backpacker in India is you got to use your mosquito net, folks, because you don't want any of that malaria stuff happening. So I had my trusty gaffer tape that I took everywhere, and I managed to gaffer tape. This is so bad. To gaffer tape the mosquito net to the light bulb, which of course I had to turn off or else it would catch fire probably.
Oh my God.
So I had to turn the light off in order to go to bed with the mosquito net on. And then I just lay there. I tucked in the mosquito net around the bed, and then I just lay there listening to the skitterings.
Oh, Lord.
But, Marty, this wasn't really one of those ding-ding, call the concierge, I'd like to request another room. It wasn't really that kind of a situation.
Right.
But listen, here's the thing. I actually was fine. That was fine. That was there was peace in that, you know?
Really? You didn't say, I absolutely have to go?
The worst thing about it, looking back, is that I didn't have a new book to read because I hadn't met any English-speaking Westerners that I could swap books with. This was in the old days. And I had to reread one of Dan Brown's later books to keep myself
entertained. Wow. I need to take a minute with that. I can handle the skittering. I can handle the one light bulb. But rereading a Dan Brown book.
It's not good. Hey, but let me tell you one other thing.
Yes.
The next time.
Yes.
I went to a new town and was ready to get a somewhere to stay. I did opt that time for a room that had a toilet instead of a hole in the corner of the floor.
Imagine the luxury. Yeah. Oh, my heavens. You really upgraded.
I was fine, but I did upgrade later, much as in my next marriage. I'm just kidding, Pookie.
I promise to stop skittering in the corners. And I may give you another light bulb soon.
Oh, lucky me.
Yeah, those are the times when you know you have to leave. And the one I've slept in some crappy hotel rooms, but the one I really thought about leaving, it was paper thin walls with this very gaudy wallpaper. And on the other side of this wall, and it really sounded like it was in the room with me, there were three very drunken men teaching each other to play the banjo. And I think they only had one banjo and they were fighting quite loudly over it. And then the one who had it was like, ning, 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 but not in a really melodic way. Yeah, leaving was the right decision, but I didn't take it. I stayed in that damn room and it haunts me to this day. So yeah, you can regret staying or you can regret leaving.
That is an excellent illustration of the theme. Yeah. Yeah.
Poor Sari's in some really difficult situation and we're talking about ridiculous hotel rooms.
Ning, 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 ning. All right. Come on, let's okay. Figure this out, Manu.
All right, let's hit it.
Yeah.
How do we figure it out? First thing we talked about, I always talk about solitude, solitude, solitude. And when I was thinking about solitude with Sari's question is the SOL at the beginning made me think of the soul thing, like the S-O-L-E, not the S-O-U-L. So get solitude in place so there's no other people around you and you have peace. And then there's solitude in the moment. There's no other moment. So then you take the risk of future regret out of it when you come into the present moment, which is the only place peace can really get you, by the way. You make yourself available by being in the soul place, in the soul time. You're locked in, then you can get an answer.
Okay, so this is just, I don't know if this is a detour or not, but when you're talking about soul, I started thinking about like the soul of your feet. And it just reminded me of something really funny that your wonderful daughter Ellie posted on the internet recently, that on Instagram. And this is a run-on sentence with no punctuation. It literally says, "I've never played so much video game in my life and I never want to again. LMAO, I feel so weird. I need to connect with the earth or something."
And a video game.
And I just, it made me think, oh, this, like, there's something to that. The soles of your feet, the soul place, the soul time, but another way away from culture is getting, I am not even kidding, barefoot. On the
ground. Yeah. Barefoot on the earth is a really powerful thing. And I always think, I feel this way sometimes in sessions when people start making a really key choice and I know I have to be quiet for them. And I think of the biblical line, because I was raised religious, where Moses is walking past this bush and it bursts into flames. And it says, "Moses, take off thy shoes, for the ground on which thou standest is holy." And I think that's holy ground when you're making a really, really hard decision. I actually like that. Take your damn shoes off and stand on the ground to do this.
Yeah.
Wow, the wisdom of the earth.
It's cool, huh?
One time I had a brilliant thought, brilliant, in the middle of the night, reached out for a notebook, scribbled it down, couldn't wait to look at it in the morning, and I had written, the palms of my feet are sweating like mules.
So listeners, just if you take nothing else from this episode, take that.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got to find, I don't know what tomorrow is going to be like. I don't know what other people are going to want me to do. So what is the most peaceful option for just me right now?
Yeah. And then as you go from one soul moment to the next soul moment, you can do whatever it takes to work on the situation as you have to deal with it. Because even if you're supposed to leave, that may take some time and you have to keep checking in, checking in, checking in. Because the peace is a compass. It changes. Maybe it's not supposed to be like, I left academia, I thought that was out, and then I got sort of steered into another academic job just for a little while, but it set me on a new course. So the peace river may take you places you don't expect. Keep checking in with it all the time. Yeah.
And I also want to say that because the point of this is that we go outside of culture, what the peace river, where that takes you is very likely to look weird to those around you. Sorry.
Yeah.
It may not make a lot of sense to other people. Don't look for validation from other people. Look for validation.
Good
within.
Point. Wisdom. Yes. Yes. And your wild self, it's not like you'll just be self-indulgent because, for example, you may quit a job because you're exhausted. And I think you have chronic fatigue syndrome, right? And like there were jobs you thought, I got to get out of this because I'm too tired. But now you're a mom. And you're exhausted and Lila wakes up crying. and your wild self.
Yeah, and then the only thing that I want to do and it is the peaceful thing is go in there and take care of her no matter how exhausted I am. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
So your wild self may look weird to other people. It may take you in different directions. It may not even make sense to you. Mm. But if you always go to that soul time, soul place, souls on the ground, and then find the peaceful option, I really do believe that we are meant to live in that peace. So follow the river. Sorry, everybody, folks. And stay wild.
We hope you're enjoying Bewildered. If you're in the USA and want to be notified when a new episode comes out, text the word WILD to 570-873-0144. We're also on Instagram. Our handle is Bewildered Podcast. You can follow us to get updates, hear funny snippets and outtakes, and chat with other fans of the show. Bewildered is produced by Scott Forster with support from the brilliant team at MBI. And remember, if you're having fun, please rate and review, and stay wild.
You know, what I'm seeing out in the world is a lot of fear and a growing amount of despair. Maybe you're feeling that way too, because the ways our culture has taught us to navigate the world, to navigate our lives, they are failing us. We need a new language. We need a new set of tools to find our way individually and as a group. And I know we can still do this. I've put everything I do know about it into Wayfinder Life Coach Training. And the tools that I teach there are to help people redefine how we relate to each other, how we make a living, how we do community. We can only change the world for the better if we redefine how we think. And the world needs Wayfinders now more than ever. So please go to marthabeck.com and you'll find your way.